PIMS, the global leader in health IT education, invites healthcare policy leaders, IT decision makers, and providers to attend the Government Health IT Conference and Exhibition, June 11th and 12th at the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center in Washington, D.C. Register at govhealthitconference.com and prepare to learn how you can effectively advance initiatives in the public sector by applying best practices gained from successes in the private sector. You'll also find out how to navigate complexities and potential policy shifts in the federal health IT environment. Come for the opportunity to share challenges and solutions with decision makers from government, health IT, and healthcare provider communities, and leave knowing how you can best take advantage of emerging health IT developments to transform healthcare. Attend the Government Health IT Conference June 11th and 12th and find out how you can adapt IT processes alongside shifting public policy to ensure the delivery of efficient, quality care. Get all the details at govhealthitconference.com.
Welcome to Health IT, a policy change agent, a panel sponsored by HIMSS, a cause-based, not-for-profit organization exclusively focused on providing global leadership to transform healthcare through the use of information technology. Today's nationally recognized experts will share their perspectives on the dynamic use of IT and how it's transforming healthcare delivery, payment, and policy. Here's your moderator, Carla Smith.
Hello, and welcome to today's discussion of health information technology as a policy change agent. I'm Carla Smith, Executive Vice President of HIMSS, and I'm pleased to serve as the moderator today for a great panel that we have on health IT experts. We have the Honorable Dr. James Peake, the Honorable Anish Chopra, and Judy Murphy. So let me introduce our panelists. The Honorable James Peake is Senior Vice President for the Health Industry at CGI Federal. Before retiring from the Army as a Lieutenant General in 2004, Dr. Peake was appointed U.S. Army Surgeon General from 2000 to 2004. In 2007, Dr. Peake was nominated by President George W. Bush to be Secretary of Veterans Affairs, where he served through January 2009. The Honorable Anish Chopra is a senior advisor with the Advisory Board Company. In 2009, he was appointed by President Obama as our nation's first U.S. Chief Technology Officer. As an assistant to the President, he designed the National Wireless Initiative and executed an open innovation strategy across agencies built on private sector collaboration. Judy Murphy serves as Deputy National Coordinator for Programs and Policy in the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT, which is part of the Department of Health and Human Services. Judy is a nurse with a long-standing reputation for patient advocacy. She joined ONC in December 2011 with more than 25 years of health informatics experience. Judy has been on the Health IT Standards Committee since its inception in May 2009, and it's an honor to have all of you here today. Today, we're going to be discussing how current foundational components of health IT, such as, but not limited to, meaningful use, will serve as catalysts to harness the power of IT through the best use of clinical and business intelligence, some of the lessons that we've learned, the ability to engage patients in each of our own healthcare, and how information exchange will be a common thread to facilitate an improved healthcare delivery system. So let's get underway. I wanted to get our conversation started talking about where are we on this long path that we have undertaken, talking about national transition to the effective use of IT in healthcare. So I'm curious about overall adoption, lessons learned, and I was wondering, Judy, if you could kick us off.
Oh, absolutely. So the programs that we have in place to incentivize the adoption of electronic health records have been actually working quite well. When we look at the adoption of electronic health records in the hospital and in the provider setting, from 2009 to 2011, the use of electronic health records has doubled in both of those venues. When we just look at the incentive program itself, we're also looking at really good numbers. So in the hospital space, we have about two-thirds of the hospitals that have registered and creeping up on a half of the hospitals that have actually been paid. So they've attested and been paid through either the Medicare or the Medicaid program. In the provider space, we're also doing quite well. We've just passed the mark of 75,000 eligible providers who have attested and been paid through either the Medicare or the Medicaid program. Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful. And Anish, just to pick up on where Judy left off talking about electronic health records, for example, that's not the limit to the potential around the national pathway and when it comes to IT?
No. I mean, I think what we're seeing are three mega trends, of which one is the growing adoption of these certified EHRs. But the other two are, I believe, equally important, if not more so. They are, in part, a change in the way care is paid for. You know, one of the challenges in innovation is not just the technological improvements, but the business model under which those technology improvements are brought to life. And now, thanks to the Affordable Care Act, we have a legally authorized Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation that has already deployed programs in pilot form and in some cases in broad strokes to provide a financial incentive to the care delivery system to provide for the kinds of care coordination, patient-centered, analytics-empowered care that is going to ride on top of this more robust infrastructure. The two go hand in hand. The third trend that has equally more, probably more personally rewarding for us, is the empowerment of the consumer. You know, we launched in the VA Blue Button to get patients to download their own personal health data. And in less than 2 years, we are north of 800,000 veterans. Now, this is on a base of about 1.2 million who had MyHealthyVet accounts. So I don't know the quite numerator denominator. There may be some confusing double counting. But the bottom line is a significant number are engaging in the trafficking of their own health information. And that will only give rise to a whole new industry of products and services focused on the patient and to assist them in navigating through what is obviously a complex healthcare maze. So these three trends, the adoption of the health IT in the provider space, the payment changes that will incentivize new capabilities that are not yet in market, and the empowered role of the patient coming together at roughly the same time gives us great hope that we will tackle the challenges of health, lowering costs and improving quality over this very short period of time.
Great. Thank you so much. And I want to pick up on what Anish was just talking about in regards to the Veterans Administration and the Blue Button Project, Dr. Peek, and other things that you have to say around the national pathway, particularly around the VA, the military, connection with the private sector.
Well, I think the VA is one of the areas where we have demonstrated how effective an electronic health record that is more than an electronic health record. It's a decision support system, a reminder system for providers, reaches out into the homes with 72,000 of our veterans that are in some form of home telehealth, which is part of this ecosystem of health technologies that are more than technology, as Anish says, that are really part of the transformation of the clinical business processes, if you will. I was at a meeting just this last week. It's very interesting. There's pros and cons out there. I was talking to one provider from New York City who runs a major emergency department, was talking about how much more information he has available to him now than before the meaningful use. He says people are adopting it and they're starting to see the results of it. And another person that sitting in an isolated environment just hasn't seen the benefit yet. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the nature of these kinds of changes. I started to say disruptive technologies. It's really not disruptive anymore. It is a disruptive technology that is actually moving into the environment.
Right. And now to pick up just on what you were talking about, Dr. Peek, with the work that you're doing at the Office of the National Coordinator, Judy, you have access to some really interesting projects that are happening at the local level through a program called the Beacon Communities. And I know that that's something that you're really excited about, and I'd love to hear you tell us a few stories.
Absolutely. But before I talk about the Beacons, I have to say, so the Beacons are 17 communities that were funded through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act that are really leading the way in looking at how do you take a community and move the health of that community through the use of health IT. So in many cases, it's actually taking competitors and encouraging them to figure out a way that they can work together to look at the health between and across facilities and venues of care. So before I get into that, though, I have to comment on the VA. So the VA is one, they're not really a beacon, okay? But they are shining a light on what we can do. They're an Uber beacon. truthfully, they are doing such a wonderful job looking at how do you leverage health IT to really make a difference. And Anish mentioned, you know, one small way, which is the consumer part. But when we look at the kinds of lessons learned that have come from the VA about how do you take information and aggregate it and have it available so that the record follows the patient wherever they go, whether that's in a VA facility or outside a VA facility, because they've got a lot of partnerships going, there's a lot of lessons to be learned by that. And the Office of the National Coordinator is constantly looking at the VA as a federal partner to really show us some of the things that work and don't work so that we can retrofit those into things like the Beacon program and some of our other strategies. So just kudos to all the work that's been going on there. In terms of the beacons, I mentioned they're really looking at health outcomes and looking at the processes that are required to get a community to come together, because this is not a natural tendency. And when I say that, it's competing organizations again, but it's also public health, visiting nurse, home health, long-term care, because that's what's data from all of those is what's really required to be able to look at the health of that community. And right now, we've been having that program going since these inceptions in late 2009, beginning of 2010, and we're just really starting to see the data being able to be aggregated and measured. And 8 of the 17 beacons are showing very, very positive outcomes in the areas of our three-part aim. So looking at better health care, and lower cost, and they're measuring all of those things. And so we're really excited to continue on this journey and to be watching those things. This year, we're trying to spend a lot of time disseminating the information so that other people can pick up on those lessons learned and start adapting it into their own programs.
Right. And I know a place where people can get some information is the conference that's coming up on June 11th and 12th right here in D.C. It's a Government Health IT Conference. And there are some panelists as part of that program who represent Beacon communities. And I also know I live in the great state of Michigan, and one of the Beacon communities is coming out of Detroit Medical Center, and there's some great stuff going on. That's just one of the 17 examples that you have.
Yeah, I just share an example. Yeah. Let me tie this back to the what does the all hands on deck approach mean, and how does the VA give us an example?
Absolutely.
Blood pressure. So there was a lot of hemming and hawing. I'm a name your pick of a specialty that doesn't naturally normally, you know, track blood pressure. Why do I have to record blood pressure? This is not what I'm trained to do. I'm a specialist in a narrow field and I only do my thing. Well, when you visit the VA, they have a little microcosm of the entire portfolio of medical specialties. And they instituted a practice where every clinical visit, regardless of specialty, checks the blood pressure. And they went from roughly 12 to 15% of patients with blood pressure under control to north of 80% mm-hmm. in markets where they've done this, all in a matter of months. And I asked the question, all right, dig a little bit deeper. What's the root cause? They said, Anish, what do you think the most frequent visit is in our care delivery system in the VA for patients? And I think, okay, emergency room, you know, some type of injury. Like, no, it's actually our, and this was a little bit depressing to hear this, but it was our psych or mental health practice. And they had never tracked blood pressure because it wasn't part of the workflow. Mm-hmm. So now what they're doing is they're tracking the blood pressure and they're acknowledging that the values when they're off, the alerts that Ms. Secretary Peak was describing trigger the, hey, why don't you go visit the specialist that is focused on, you know, this concern around blood pressure. It dramatically increased the ability to capture these problems before they turned into crisis. It's an example of what this community beacon, all hands on deck approach is all about, based on learnings we gathered from the VA itself.
Absolutely, and it improves the outcomes for the patient because you're making the mind-body connection of some physical characteristics that might be contributing to mental health. Good point. And I see Dr. Peak
further
there.
Because if you start looking at what some of the studies that came out of the VA about blood pressure, when you start looking at a macro effect, they've been able to chart seasonality of blood pressure changes so that you know that maybe the patient's under control and it's just the season where the blood pressure is up a little bit. So there are other things that can come out of being able to aggregate that data beyond just what it takes to take care of that one service member or veteran.
Growing big data apps economy.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. And Dr. Peak, take that a little farther. So just because of all of your experience and the stories that we've just been talking about here anecdotally, what are the intent the intents of these policies? Why is it a good thing to have, for example, as a nation, you have just been talking about 80% of blood pressures now being captured, et cetera?
Well, you know, every physician, I'm convinced, wants to do the right thing by his patient or her patient. But sometimes what you have in the back of your mind isn't all of the data. And so if you can have that available and then have it in a system that allows it to help you make decisions on behalf of your patient, to remind you of the things you may have forgotten, or to tip you to things that you, asking that next question, that starts to be a tremendous value.
Mm-hmm. And to piggyback on to what Dr. Peek just said, Anish, I'll bet you've got some opinions on that, of the intent when it comes to payment models and cost effectiveness.
Well, listen, at the end of the day, our economy responds to incentives. And to be very frank, in a world of fee-for-service medicine, most of your incentives are to squeeze one more visit in a day in order to make ends meet. So the 6.5-minute visit becomes 5 minutes and 45 seconds, becomes 5 minutes and 30 if you wanted to, quote, be more productive. So productivity is defined in our economy today, fee-for-service medicine, more visits, not better care at lower cost. We believe that by changing the payment, and now, by the way, this is a bipartisan view. This is, I was just recently with Secretary Leavitt, who in the Bush administration had issued an executive order focused on value-based care delivery. At the time, I was Governor Kane's Secretary of Technology. Governor Kane, a Democrat, was the first governor in the country to replicate the Leavitt-Bush executive order to demonstrate this is a bipartisan focus of health reform, that we move the payment system to value. What that means is the challenge for the country is to measure value, and that's a journey that we're on as a country. But the point is, if we improve the outcomes of the patient, those who contributed to that improvement should benefit. And early evidence suggests that those incentives matter. When you start to pay doctors differently, they start to look about their workflow and say, okay, today I've got 25 patients on the schedule. Are these the right 25 patients I should be seeing today based on the probability of them potentially seeking falling a bit further down the path of a poorer health condition? Now, that starts to ask questions, which when the technology industry responds, well, there should be an app for that. I should be able to pre-populate your healthcare list, Dr. So-and-so, with the patients that you need to speak to today, maybe by phone or FaceTime video chat or in person. And that type of incentive-induced change in workflow and behavior is part of the excitement around why today's the best time to be an innovator in healthcare.
Thank you, Anish. You're listening to Health IT as a Policy Change Agent, a panel sponsored by HIMSS on 1500 AM Federal News Radio.
HIMSS, the global leader in health IT education, invites healthcare policy leaders, IT decision makers, and providers to attend the Government Health IT Conference and Exhibition, June 11th and 12th at the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center in Washington, D.C. Register at govhealthitconference.com and prepare to learn how you can effectively advance initiatives in the public sector by applying best practices gained from successes in the private sector. You'll also find out how to navigate complexities and potential policy shifts in the federal health IT environment. Come for the opportunity to share challenges and solutions with decision makers from government, health IT, and healthcare provider communities, and leave knowing how you can best take advantage of emerging health IT developments to transform healthcare. Attend the Government Health IT Conference June 11th and 12th and find out how you can adapt IT processes alongside shifting public policy to ensure the delivery of efficient, quality care. Get all the details at govhealthitconference.com.
And we are back on 1500 AM Federal News Radio, and you're listening to Health IT as a Policy Change Agent, a panel sponsored by HIMSS. I am your host, Carla Smith. And before the break, we were talking about physicians looking at a list of patients and asking him or herself, is this the right 25 patients on my list? So Anish, let me have you expand a little bit about what does that mean of physicians being able to make decisions around patient lists?
So there are emerging payment models that are underway as we speak. Payment models like the patient-centered medical home, where the clinic, under patient consent and with their support, are taking a look at all of the information that's available that was generated inside the practice, but increasingly generated outside of the practice. How many patients were recently discharged from the hospital that didn't get their medications when they left the to go to the pharmacy, and did they fill that order? So those types of alerts are now fed into these medical homes to say, by the way, reminder, Dr. So-and-so, the patient that you saw in the hospital 2 weeks ago hasn't taken care of the things that they were expected to do. They didn't get their medications ordered. They haven't gotten follow-on visits with maybe a nurse practitioner or a physician extender. So this is someone we should reach out to, because if we don't, they might fall through the cracks and end up back in the emergency room. 20% of patients that discharge from a hospital in Medicare end up right back into the emergency room. And as a country, this is estimated to be about a $25 billion challenge, the readmissions challenge. One of the key questions is, how do we ensure that we can reach out to these folks, and again, in the financial environment, get reimbursed for seeing them to make sure that they stay on track with what's needed to keep them healthy and to prevent the kind of the health conditions that result in them back in the emergency room. So the question is ultimately, how are clinics today capable of figuring out who are those patients that are about to get worse in their care so that you can address their concerns above and beyond? Now, a part of this is changing the workforce in healthcare delivery. So it's not just the physician's time. It's the nurse practitioner, the physician extender. Heck, we worked with Dr. Tim Garson at UVA. He's recruiting grandparents. He launched an initiative called GrandAids. Any person who discharges from a hospital in his pilot programs, grandma, equipped with an electronic medical record or health record and a laptop, goes knocking on doors for house calls to triage just a small number of conditions that grandma's trained to track. So you're going to see a change in the workforce, mm-hmm. in part because we'll have new financial incentives and resources so that they can be put towards the best activities, communicating with patients before they get sick or to prevent the more difficult conditions as they arise.
Thank you. That is really good information. And I know that that doesn't happen by magic. All of that health information being at the right place at the right time includes some electronic exchange of that health information. And Judy, I know that this is something you know a lot about.
So health information exchange is one of our biggest challenges. In a lot of ways in healthcare, we have been siloed in that we provided care within a particular setting, and we had either paper record or even the early electronic records, which were facility or venue specific. And what exchange is doing now is taking the important pieces of information that should be moved around with the patient and exchanging it between those facilities and breaking down the silos. So you can imagine the kind of information that would be helpful. Demographic information about the patient, their age and birth date and all those things, but also things like the problem list, the allergy list, the medication list, maybe their last assessment, maybe some key lab data. And unfortunately, because we grew up in this siloed, we don't have a lot of standards. So in order to do the interoperability or the exchange, we have to develop and use and implement those standards. And those are standards around the vocabulary or the words that we use. It's also standards around the way we package up the information and transport it between the facilities.
So Judy, so an example of a standard in the healthcare world could be the word fever.
That's exactly correct. And even within fever, it might be things like, if you were describing the skin, what words would you use? It's pink, it's fair, it's blotched. You know, the value sets themselves, because again, if we're going to move that information and then be able to accept it into a different electronic health record and actually populate a flow sheet, for example, you'd have to know that you were using the same words.
Mm-hmm. And there are some great examples going on around the nation right now on exchange electronically of health information with appropriate security protocols, because in addition to the standards, of course, there are security issues. And so, for example, I know in the state of Maine that the Maine Center for Disease Control and Prevention is linking to the statewide public health information system so that they can automate the lab reporting requirements. And those are some of the examples of things that we'll be covering on June 11th and 12th at the Government Health IT Conference. Let me kind of move over here to Dr. Peek again, in regards to how some of these lessons learned around patient engagement and patient-centered medical home and exchange of health information, are there lessons learned that you'd like to share that could be emulated in the private sector?
Well, I know the military now is taking on the issue of the patient-centered medical home, mm-hmm. and it's trying to assemble the information, as Anish was talking about earlier, to understand who is the best person. This is not about diminishing touch of the patient. This is about increasing touch of the patient, but by perhaps the right provider. And maybe it's a different kind of provider. It's part of the healthcare team that I can give you just an example. I started an ambulatory surgery program at one point. One of the most important things we did was have the call back by the nurse the following morning. And it wasn't just to reassure the patient, which it absolutely did, but it was to pick up the nuance of what is different about that patient. Do you need to come back in one day? Do you need to come back that afternoon? Or can you wait a week? Is everything fine? Just that kind of information that can be passed and now assembled electronically. I mean, I believe this mobility explosion is going to engage the patients in ways that we've never been able to do before. Their iPhone is going to be their connectivity to the healthcare system that will increase their touch rather than create a barrier, as some people are sometimes concerned about.
Yeah. Of course. And Judy, patient engagement, there are some wonderful opportunities, I'm sure, that you'd like to discuss.
Absolutely. So actually two comments on Health Exchange, and one is about the patient. So when we talk about exchanging, we focused a bit here on exchanging information between the healthcare facilities themselves. The patient is a big contributor to that as well, and we want to make sure that we're also exchanging information with the patient. And what I mean by that is, if it's patient documented information, like their blood sugars when they're at home, if they're a diabetic that's under control and taking care of themselves, their blood pressures, if they're tracking their blood pressure, when they then come into a healthcare venue, to have accessibility, if you will, to that patient documented information really helps inform that encounter and make better decisions. The second thing I wanted to say is that exchanging information for the care of individual patients is about half of the equation with Health Exchange. The other half of the equation is actually, and Anish alluded to it earlier when he talked about big data, that we're able, once this data is electronic, to actually look at it in its entirety. So if we've got standards and we're all contributing, we can actually create these big data warehouses. And why that's so important is so that we can track the health of that community, but even more importantly, it's going to help us inform the future. So we're building new evidence for our future evidence-based practice. We're seeing what works and what doesn't work and the nuances of the care that we're providing so that we can correlate that and say, oh, this thing really makes a difference and this thing doesn't. What we thought was true is maybe different. And so, again, evidence-based practice is what often drives us in the individual patient encounter. So here we're talking about creating new evidence so we can put new things into our decision support based on that evidence.
So an example could be, as we look across the nation, I know Medicare has tremendous amounts of data that demonstrate that there are different rates of incidences of, for example, open heart surgery across the nation. And by being able to look at that data systemically, for Medicare to be able to be making some good guidance decisions to help equalize it out, ensure that the right patient is getting that open heart surgery at the right time.
Absolutely. I mean, you're talking about something that a lot of folks have been talking about, and that's comparative effectiveness research, if you will, or patient-centered outcome research, where we look at where there's differences, and when you see differences in outcomes, then you work backwards to see what are the differences in care, and that helps, again, drive new practice because we see what's working and what's not.
I got to tell you, this is the consumer internet economy looks in healthcare a bit like, what is that? So if you ask the typical gamer, World of Warcraft, Zynga, they're tracking every single nuanced interaction between the customer and the game. So the file on Anish Chopra's gaming patterns is in the megabits, potentially gigabits of information, because they are understanding, how did I react in that scene where a particular adversary was presented to me, and based on my reaction, did I perform well or not so well? This type of data-driven analytics approach in driving how they build better versions of their video game is just core to the DNA of the industry. Then you ask cancer. The country's been on a war on cancer since the 1970s. And I ask everywhere I go, how much analysis is there on what actually is happening to patients with cancer? Well, the big mega systems all have their internal databases, but that represents an overwhelming minority of all of the patient's experience. So if Safeway and Walmart can tell me with surgical precision what coupon to offer me to convince me to buy the homegrown version of Oreos versus the branded one on a Friday afternoon when I pick up the milk or whatever, then it is shocking we lack the same an analytical capacity to figure out what particular medical intervention in a patient of this type addressed and delivered what type of outcomes. We wait 17 years for evidence base in healthcare to permeate across the country. Zynga and World of Warcraft take about 17 minutes to change what worked or what didn't into the game so that it has an impact. And so if we can see that kind of innovation and productivity in a sector of the economy where perhaps it's not quite tied to the biggest challenges our country faces, and you start to see even a smidgling, a little mini-me version of that in healthcare, we will start to see incredible outcomes. Companies like Patients Like Me and other startups are demonstrating that if people can share information and can make judgments, look, if you've been diagnosed with cancer, should you seek surgical intervention or radiation? If you ask a radiation oncologist, you might be encouraged to get radiation therapy. You see a surgical surgeon, you might be encouraged to. Who's giving you the evidence base as to what works for you? So this is the country economy where we need to be in terms of driving analysis and why we see such great potential. But, and this is an important question, we don't know how we will get the evidence base on this discussion. For some, it'll be the accountable care organization to whom you've entrusted your data. And Medicare is going to share your claims data unless you choose to opt out of that program in those models. For others, it'll be a patient-centered model. I'd like my blue button data, and I'm going to share it with my partner. In this case, maybe it's Patients Like Me, maybe it's somebody else outside of the care delivery system so that I have a separate community. For others, it may be just their primary care medical home that's not part of a large integrated network, who's just someone I entrust to be the centerpiece for all of this data. There are multiple pathways, and the good news is we're trying to push all of them forward to turn to see what works and to scale, hopefully, the best of the ideas.
Thank you. And now we've mentioned the term blue button a couple of times. Dr. Peake, could you just tell our audience what is blue button?
Well, blue button is the ability for you to go to a single point and have it download essentially a flat file of your medical information. Mm-hmm. And it started in the VA with Peter Levin, who's this great CTO over there, but it has spread to other venues as well, from the military to, I guess, Social Security, CMS rather now has that ability. But it started out as a very fundamental, just give me the data and let me have it as a patient.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great example of innovation. Right, and releasing data to Americans so that we have access to our information so that we can become engaged in our healthcare. And I know that from a policy perspective that is a focus for the federal government. And Anish, you've had a lot of experience in this, of unlocking that data in an innovative way.
Well, when you face a sector of the economy where security and privacy are tantamount, they are the absolute supreme, you know that under every scenario, the customer is entitled to their own information. So whether I entrust someone on my behalf to share it with others, that's a judgment at the state level where there's variance of opinion, but everybody believes that the customer deserves that data. So our thesis was for spurring some degree of innovation in the market by allowing individuals to have access to information in increasingly more standardized formats, it will spawn an apps economy. Now, it's funny, some of our first blue button apps are actually in the jobs industry, not the health industry, because in the VA, the blue button allows you not only to get your health data, but also your military service data. And I'll just share with you the story of Tony Webster. Tony Webster is a freelance software developer in San Francisco who received an email at 5:30 p.m. on a Tuesday in January, because I happened to have been at the headquarters of a company called Twilio, where the CEO heard about this opportunity to turn blue button data into value-added applications to help veterans find civilian jobs. So he referenced in an email that went out to the 75,000 developers that are part of the Twilio apps ecosystem, including Tony, and said, look, why don't you guys build an app? If you guys can do something in the next 8 hours, there's a chance you can shake hands with Dr. Jill Biden, who happened to be with me in San Francisco to celebrate about a dozen apps that had already been in development. Tony got the message. I think it was about 7:30 on a Tuesday. By 9 o'clock, he submitted his final application. And what does it do? It does three things. The core of a blue button file is that it allows you to download your military occupation code. So this just says, what's your military occupation code? What's your zip code, i.e. where do you live? And what is your cell phone number? Based on these three pieces of data, it consumes all of the open information that we've made available, and it text messages veterans with five of the most relevant jobs that are open and available for them in their communities every single morning. He built it in not even 2 hours, and that's the kind of secondary market, secondary use of data that will be unbelievably exciting to watch and will have a big story, a big role to play in this story as it unfolds in lowering costs, improving quality, achieving the triple aim.
You're listening to Health IT as a Policy Change Agent, a panel sponsored by HIMSS on 1500 AM Federal News Radio.
HIMSS, the global leader in health IT education, invites healthcare policy leaders, IT decision makers, and providers to attend the Government Health IT Conference and Exhibition, June 11th and 12th at the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center in Washington, D.C. Register at govhealthitconference.com and prepare to learn how you can effectively advance initiatives in the public sector by applying best practices gained from successes in the private sector. You'll also find out how to navigate complexities and potential policy shifts in the federal health IT environment. Come for the opportunity to share challenges and solutions with decision makers from government, health IT, and healthcare provider communities, and leave knowing how you can best take advantage of emerging health IT developments to transform healthcare. Attend the Government Health IT Conference June 11th and 12th and find out how you can adapt IT processes alongside shifting public policy to ensure the delivery of efficient, quality care. Get all the details at govhealthitconference.com.
And we are back on 1500 AM Federal News Radio, and you're listening to Health IT as a Policy Change Agent, a panel sponsored by HIMSS. I'm your host, Carla Smith. And before the break, we were just talking about innovation and unlocking data and about the federal government's engagement and all of that. And Judy, I want to tie this back to the patient. So I was wondering if you could kick us off.
Yeah. So we talked a bit about the consumer and the importance of involving them. I think what we didn't talk about yet was why that's so important. So, of course, there's the obvious. The patient has information that no one else has. So the physician can prescribe a medication, but only the patient knows if they actually are taking that medication. And so, you know, that's an obvious one. But the importance of health IT to the patient is also hooking them on the idea that they're a partner in their care. And that's where the power really lies. It's not just in the data, it's in that attitude. So if we give them access to their information, they might become hooked on it, probably will become hooked on, you know, gee, I can make an appointment. Gee, I can look at what happened to me at the last time I saw the physician. As they're doing that, we're changing their attitude about health being managed externally to health being managed with them as a partner. And that's something that's not been the case in our country. you know, it's all been about the doctor managing my care rather than me. And so then you can make sort of the obvious next steps that it's not just managing your health care then. It's also about managing and partnering in your health and healthy behaviors and taking over control of your life in areas that maybe you knew you should have, but you didn't.
Mm-hmm. Those are great examples. And so from the perspective of policymakers and administrators, Judy, you just made a great point about the patients. How can healthcare administrators and policymakers use intelligence? Earlier in the presentation, we were just talking about the mountain of data that's becoming available. So clinical intelligence, business intelligence, talk to us a little bit about that.
So again, you know, just to harken back to this idea that once we know what we're supposed to do, we can hardwire that into our health IT, particularly electronic health records. And hardwiring that would mean making sure that the best practice is always executed through things like clinical decision support, but also through things like standardized order sets and using the extenders to do some of the things that we know we should be doing anyway. And I always use that term hardwire because it's making it easy to do the right thing.
And when you say extenders, you mean clinical
part
extenders.
Of that patient-centered clinical extenders, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So nurses or physician assistants or in some cases social workers or dietitians.
Don't forget grandma.
Grandma, pharmacists.
Parish nurses.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But let me just make this, this is an obvious point, we didn't maybe raise it yet today. Roughly 5% of the patients in America account for about half the total costs. So the question is, which 5%? This requires analysis. So there is today, sponsored by a health plan, maybe an accountable care organization, would maybe be a better description of it, Heritage Health in California. They've turned to a platform called Kaggle to invite data scientists from all around the world to help develop algorithms to better predict which patients are most likely to get sick in a safe, secure way. They've got a contest going. They're offering a $3 million prize for those analyses to be done. So in the same way that Netflix wants to know which movie recommendation's right for you or Amazon wants to suggest which book is right for you, there's a similar challenge in healthcare. Who are the 5%? And what can we do to better manage their care, to lower their costs and improve their outcomes? Now, we know this can be done. We've seen this in market after market. But the hard part is the analysis to know which ones, because you can't just take a look at, you know, just their names and a little bit of background information and say, aha, it's you, Judy. You're going to be the one that's going to cost $500,000, you know, all the money. So I'd like to know a little bit more about, the more I know about Judy, the more I can understand what it is that will drive that behavior. This is the emerging data scientist community, and I am very hopeful. The White House recently announced its initiative around big data to get researchers to build better tools to make it easier for us to find patterns in lots of unstructured and clumsy data, which is unfortunately the world of healthcare as it is today. So I'm hopeful that this movement will bring some pretty useful insights to figuring out who should we target our energy on, and then what can we do to coordinate and manage the care once we've honed in on those that we're most concerned about.
I think Anish is right about it really is about the different data streams that we've not had to integrate before that now give us the opportunity to ask the next set of questions that we never knew what to ask before. And it'll affect things like, how does our system function? How should it look in the future for optimization, as well as how do you optimize for that individual patient right in front of you at the time?
As soon as you start thinking about it, it unlocks whole new worlds, because you have very smart people who go to nursing school and medical school and the other clinical care and health administrators. These are very bright people. You unlock new worlds and ways of thinking about things.
Right. I was at the American Surgical Association. I was delighted to see them funding a researcher looking at natural language processing to be able to get at the internal aspects of the, this is from the American Surgical Association, you know, to funding somebody to do that kind of work. And it's just extraordinary what we're going to be able to get out of unstructured data that Anish is talking about, because a lot of it's still going to be unstructured data, I think.
Mm-hmm. And so, Anish, a question for you is, as we think about meaningful use and the ACO push that came out of recent legislation, where are some other places that policy ought to be going in the future?
Well, the big challenge in front of us today is around security and privacy, because these are more complex matters. There's governance issues. These are often state issues. There are emerging threats. So as we digitize the healthcare system, it's coming at a time when we are increasingly facing more and more sophisticated attacks on the internet. And there's a thoughtful concern about what it is that we can do to ensure the protection of that data. You'll hear more about this in the weeks to come. The White House recently issued a Consumer Privacy Bill of Rights Now, because of HIPAA, we have a strong foundation in healthcare, but more can be done. For example, just to give you an example of this, HIPAA never envisioned a personal health record. So personal health records today are not legally bound by the rules of HIPAA. But the question is, absent, you know, woe is me is one attitude, but the other attitude is let's engage in a voluntary consensus manner, as the president had called for. And going back to the Bush administration and carrying over to the Obama administration, you saw stakeholders sat around the table and said, what is a voluntary code of conduct that personal health record vendors should adopt to protect patient privacy and make sure that data is secure? That led to essentially a groundbreaking agreement Secretary Sebelius announced in September of 2011, so that individuals now have confidence their personal health record vendors that agreed to the commitment to make their to give patients control over who has access to their data and how it will be resold and advertising and all the rest. Now they're equipped with the authority to know, aha, my vendor has promised me to abide by this voluntary enforceable code of conduct. If my vendor lies, they are subject to FTC existing authority to say you can't lie to your customer. So emerging challenges in security and privacy, I think, are still in front of us, and we're making progress, but more to be done. My final observation is, this is where Beacon matters a lot to me. You know, we've thrown out a lot of policy options. There's Medicare Innovation Center programs. There's Beacon Community investments. There's meaningful use incentive payments. You've got private sector-led care delivery transformation grants, private and nonprofit. It's really finding the leadership in a community, a mayor, a governor, to say, we want to solve X, and we're going to mobilize all of these tools that the current healthcare economy offers us, and we're going to organize them in the right way to showcase what the future will look like, not in 10 years, but today. And that, I think, is why I'm so excited about Beacon. Beacon wasn't a mandate. It wasn't a force. It was a voluntary grassroots effort that will, I think, lead to some policy change as they uncover things they didn't envision putting these pieces together. And it might be local level policies. I'll just make one final observation. You know, solar energy is becoming cost competitive, and we'll reach grid parity by 2020. The one barrier that is not coming down in cost is the cost of solar permitting at the local level. This is like waiting for the cable guy to get solar panels installed on your roof. Who would have thought that, like, this really complicated solar physics, PV, energy conversion, paneling, very sophisticated science, and the thing that sucks is the billion-dollar bureaucracy at the local level. So we're going to uncover these kinds of issues, and we'll tackle them because Beacons are giving us one evidence base, and hopefully others will come.
Mm-hmm. There are some major security issues that have to be grappled with, and Anish was just talking about them. I know at the Government Health IT Conference that we're going to be addressing some security issues around mobile use of information technology, et cetera. And Judy, this is something that the Office of the National Coordinator is right on top of.
Absolutely. There's a whole office within ONC that is looking at privacy and security and what rules are required through regulation and also what governance issues really need to be addressed. In addition to privacy and security, though, which I think Anish did a pretty good job of describing, you know, there's overall data liberation, if you will, governance issues. So when we start to liberate the data, what kinds of controls do we put around that? In other words, who gets to look at it? Who gets identified information? Who gets de-identified information? As we establish trust in a health information exchange, can I turn around, if I get data from you, can I turn around and give it to someone else? Or do I have to go back to ask you in order to give it away to yet somebody else? You know, all of these are the issues that around this whole governance. And actually, the Office of the National Coordinator right now has a request for information out for people to comment on that health exchange, data exchange governance, which is a really important piece to understand what the industry thinks is important. And we hope to have then a rule out by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. And Judy, I want to pick up on what you just said with Dr. Peek. The feedback from the American public when the government promulgates its rules is tremendously insightful and valuable, I know. And what are some pieces of counsel and guidance would you give to the listening audience about getting engaged and reading this and making comments on it?
Well, I think when you start looking at the what we have discussed here today, you're really talking about many, many, many stakeholders, whether it's the industry, it's the providers, it's the hospital associations, or it's the individuals out there. I think everybody has a reason to be heard in this. And, I was thinking as you were talking about, Judy, this, why would the VA, which some people would view as a closed system, or the military, which some people would view as a closed system, be so important in this? And the fact is, the VA every year spends billions of dollars buying healthcare in the industry that you're talking about out there. The military spends 65% of its operational medical dollars buying care in the network of civilian providers. And it is all of those that provide the picture of the patient to optimize the care that they receive. And so really all of those folks have a reason to be heard in this discussion.
If I just made just on this one point, one voice makes a difference. Judy and I sat on the Health IT Standards Committee, and a primary care doctor in Virginia testified. I remember this. This was an unplanned moment. The physician shared an anecdote about how a patient of his was moving to Arizona, and by silly luck, the patient's new doctor had the same software package as this doctor did and asked that the records be transferred electronically. After a long description of the pain by which it was to send that information, the physician asked a very basic question, when will we have safe email or secure email that would allow us to send data back and forth? And I turned to Judy and others on the panel. We said, this guy's right. And that led to the DIRECT project, which in less than 90 days got industry voluntary consensus on protocols for safe, secure email. You secure and authenticate who the sender and the receiver is, and you encrypt the file in between. And that this lean startup, birthed by one voice at a hearing who was unscripted in the moment, challenging us to solve a problem, got done. And less than a year and a half after that moment, we now have in stage two meaningful use rules that require essentially DIRECT as one of the key options for sharing data. And it's becoming part of the DNA. I'm a Virginian. Virginia went live. Every physician in Virginia is offered a free email account using Connect Virginia, which is our state HIE, so that they can start to share safely and securely patient health information. One voice
makes
can make a
difference. And thank you very much. That actually concludes our discussion today on Health IT as a Policy Change Agent, sponsored by HIMSS on 1500 AM Federal News Radio. I'd really like to thank our wonderful panelists, Dr. James Peek, the Honorable Anish Chopra, and Judy Murphy. We'll be continuing this discussion at the Government Health IT Conference on June 11th and 12th in Washington, D.C., and full registration of the conference is only $50 for government employees. Thanks so much for listening. If you missed anything, this panel will be available on demand at www.federalnewsradio.com, as well as at www.govhealthitconference.com.
Thank you for listening to Health IT, a Policy Change Agent, a panel sponsored by HIMSS on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any portion of this show, you can listen to the show in its entirety on demand at federalnewsradio.com.
HIMSS, the global leader in health IT education, invites healthcare policy leaders, IT decision makers, and providers to attend the Government Health IT Conference and Exhibition, June 11th and 12th at the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center in Washington, D.C. Register at govhealthitconference.com and prepare to learn how you can effectively advance initiatives in the public sector by applying best practices gained from successes in the private sector. You'll also find out how to navigate complexities and potential policy shifts in the federal health IT environment. Come for the opportunity to share challenges and solutions with decision makers from government, health IT, and healthcare provider communities, and leave knowing how you can best take advantage of emerging health IT developments to transform healthcare. Attend the Government Health IT Conference June 11th and 12th and find out how you can adapt IT processes alongside shifting public policy to ensure the delivery of efficient, quality care. Get all the details at govhealthitconference.com.